Radio Prague News. Doctors around the country closed down their offices on Thursday. Viktor Kozhenny, the Pirate of Prague, has been arrested in the Bahamas. And the Austrian firm OMV has taken over the Aral petrol filling stations in the Czech Republic. Doctors around the country closed down their offices on Thursday in protest at late payments from the state-run health insurance company VZP. Around 1,500 demonstrators gathered in front of the Health Ministry building in Prague in support of the private doctors' strike. The doctors were joined in the demonstration by pharmacists and dentists and by some politicians from the right-wing opposition Civic Democrats. During the protest, there were calls for the resignation of the health minister Milada Emirova, who was blamed for the current cash flow crisis. Talks between Mrs. Emirova and doctors are to continue after a two-hour meeting on Thursday afternoon ended in deadlock. Viktor Kozhenny has been arrested by the FBI, according to unconfirmed reports. The businessman of Czech origin is wanted by the US authorities on large-scale corruption charges. Mr. Kozhenny and two other men are said to have bribed high-ranking officials in Azerbaijan to get favorable deals in the privatization of the local oil industry. If found guilty of all charges, Mr. Kozhenny could face a prison sentence of 20 years and another 5 years for every 27 points of the indictment. Mr. Kozhenny is also wanted in the Czech Republic. He's been accused of abusing the so-called coupon privatization after the fall of communism, through which he absconded with billions of Czech crowns belonging to thousands of small shareholders. Mr. Kozhenny, who was given Irish citizenship in 1995, lives in the Bahamas. The Austrian firm OMV has taken over the Czech chain of petrol filling stations Aral. OMV's director said that they plan to invest up to $5 million in the chain. He said that Aral stations will all adopt the OMV logo within the next 6 months, but he would not say how much OMV had paid for the company. The deal will make OMV the chain selling the largest volume of car fuel in the Czech Republic. The Polish petrochemicals concern PKN Orlen had also been interested in buying Aral. 44 people were injured in a coach accident on the D1 motorway in the direction of the Moravian capital Brno on Thursday. Czech police say the coach with tourists from Germany slammed into the back end of a truck. 3 helicopters and 19 ambulances rushed to the scene of the accident. 7 people, including the coach driver, are in critical condition. A billboard campaign has been launched to warn drivers to approach railway crossings with caution. There'll also be warnings published in Czech newspapers. The campaign will be financed till the end of the year by Czech Railways, and a sponsor is being sought for it to continue next year. In 2004, there were no less than 600 current accidents on railway crossings, nearly a quarter of which do not have barriers. The Transport Minister, Milan Szymanowski, pointed out that, ironically, most accidents are on crossings where visibility is good. And if we look at the weather, we can expect more bright and mild weather for the time of year leading into the weekend, with plenty of sunshine and temperatures up to 19 degrees Celsius. I'm Dita Asidu, and that's the end of the news.
You are tuned to Radio Prague. I'm Pavla Horáková. In today's program, the Pirate of Prague has been arrested in the Bahamas, but will he ever face justice in the Czech Republic? Could the Communist Party be banned? And an exhibition featuring 100 Czech design icons has opened in Prague. We'll have all that, plus a roundup of this week's business news, so please stay tuned. Viktor Kozhenny, the so-called Pirate of Prague, is currently sitting in a police cell in his adopted home of the Bahamas after being arrested by the FBI. On Thursday, federal prosecutors charged him and two other men with participating in a scheme to bribe senior government officials in Azerbaijan over lucrative oil privatization deals. He now faces extradition to the United States. But, as Rob Cameron reports, Czech investors defrauded by Mr. Kozhenny have little hope of seeing their money again.
Viktor Kozhiny, chubby messiah of the early 1990s privatization process and darling of right-wing post-communist governments, Viktor Kozhiny, wanted fugitive with an Irish passport and a luxury villa in the Bahamas, who once allegedly spent £3,000 on lunch in a London restaurant. And now Viktor Kozhiny, detainee in a Bahamas prison cell, awaiting extradition to America. Mr. Kozhiny made his name in the no-holds-barred free market free-for-all that followed the fall of communism. In the early 1990s, the right-wing government of Václav Klaus sold off shares in large state-owned companies, giving ordinary Czechs the chance to acquire them as a good investment for the future. 40 years of communist rule, however, meant most people were unacquainted with the ins and outs of share deals. Many, therefore, decided to allow the promising Harvard investment funds, founded by Viktor Kozhiny, to manage their assets. Economist Jan Schiese.
He played a very important role at the very beginning when he promised 10 times value through his investment funds. And this marketing campaign was actually the trigger that made people think of buying the vouchers and then buying the shares or putting the shares through investment funds. Unfortunately, at the end of the privatization, he turned to be the very bad example of siphoning the money out of companies or investment funds. So, yes, I think that what Viktor Kozhiny and other people did was the biggest mistake.
Instead of investing their money, Mr. Kozhiny allegedly absconded with it, a lot of it. After buying an Irish passport in 1995, he settled in the Bahamas, posing on his yacht and sipping cocktails by the pool. He ignored feeble attempts by the Czech authorities to bring him to justice. He wasn't even charged until 2003. But there was no extradition treaty between the Bahamas and the Czech Republic, so Mr. Kozhiny had little to fear. That's not the case with the United States, and Mr. Kozhiny is likely to face trial over his business dealings in Azerbaijan. But those Czech shareholders who unwittingly subsidized Mr. Kozhiny's island paradise have little hope of seeing their money again. By the time American lawyers are through with him, he may well be left penniless. All they can do is wonder at the might of American justice and the impotence of their own.
My thanks to Rob Cameron for that report. The Upper House of Parliament on Thursday approved a bill that would ban propagation of Nazism and Communism in the Czech Republic. Anyone caught violating the ban could be sentenced to up to 8 years in prison. Although the bill stands little chance of becoming law, it has evoked many questions. Primarily, why wasn't the issue confronted 16 years ago, immediately after the fall of communism? Daniela Lazarova has been following the story. So, Daniela, why this long delay?
Well, Pavla, as a number of senators pointed out, there simply wasn't enough political will at the time. Part of the Communist Party was then supporting the democratization process, at least on paper. And I believe that many people simply thought that the Communist Party would be marginalized or pushed out of politics entirely by the will of the people in democratic elections.
But the largely unreformed Communist Party is still in Parliament. It has over a million supporters and is playing a fairly active role in Czech politics. So is this a belated attempt to ban it?
Well, no. The bill was approved by 41 out of the 3 senators present, and all those who raised their hands in favour of it were aware that it stood practically no chance of approval in the lower house of parliament, since the Social Democrats and the Communists are strong enough to sweep it off the table if they pull their votes. Communist MPs have already ridiculed it. They're calling it unconstitutional. But I think that for most of the senators, it was simply a question of taking a moral stand, belated though it was. I spoke earlier to independent Senator Eduard Otrata, who also supported the bill, and he explained that if approved, the bill would force the Communist Party to change its name, to change its policy to a certain extent, and to distance itself from the past, which most people believe it has not done properly to date. But he said that nobody was really expecting that to happen because, as I said, the bill will almost certainly be rejected by the lower house. The Senator Otrata himself, said he had other reasons for supporting the bill. So let's hear what they are.
For me, for example, the most issue was that Nazism is treated differently than communism. And I found that that is wrong. It's immoral to recognize any difference between the two. Others felt otherwise. a significant part of the right wing simply thought that the demonstration must now be made, because if it isn't, we'll allow a merger of the left-wing parties that would propagate communism much more than has happened in the past. I don't think that's true, but that was the intent of some of these people.
Independent Senator Eduard Outrata ending that report, Nela Lazarová. Now it's make or break time for the Czech football team. On Saturday, they face the Netherlands in the first of two crucial qualifying games for next year's World Cup, a competition they last reached way back in 1990. If the Czechs beat Group 1 leaders Holland and Finland next Wednesday, they could secure themselves an automatic World Cup place. But several important players are out injured, and it won't be easy. Ian Willoughby caught up with Czech goalkeeper Petr Čech at the team's Prague hotel and asked him if he and his teammates were nervous ahead of the big games.
We're not feeling extra pressure, but we cannot feel comfortable that we've got a lot of injured players, because in our country you've got a lot of good players for the national team, but six injured players it's a little bit too much for us.
So what do you think? How do you think you will approach the game against Holland?
I think because there is obligation to have 3 points if Romania wins in Finland, so we need to play well. We need to start playing for the 3 points. But I think it's in our mentality. We're always playing the games to win the game. So I think we're gonna do the same even with the injured players, and even our opponent is tough.
Before the last World Cup, the Czechs lost in the playoffs to Belgium. Are you really, really keen to avoid the playoffs? Because they're quite a lottery. Is it something you're really keen to avoid by winning the next two games?
I think it's not really important the way you qualified. If we have to play the knockout stage, we're going to play there. And I think we can be, with a lot of confidence for these games. But, we can still be qualified directly from the second place. We need to have 6 points, so we're going to try to do that. And we will see, because there is some teams that are one step forward, and we need to wait for the other results. So it's not in our hands. So we will see what's going to happen.
Some of the team, like yourself and Milan Baroš, are in their early 20s, but other players like Jan Koller, Paborski, and so on are heading towards the end of their careers. Would you say for the older guys, there's more pressure to try to get to the World Cup? You'll have another chance.
Of course, they've been trying it such a long time, and they've never been successful to go through the qualifications to World Cup. So I think for them, might be the last chance, maybe in his career, one of the last possibilities to go to the World Cup. So, of course, we would like to be qualified for them as well, because it's going to be nice for them to maybe finish in the national team in the World Cup.
Ian Willoughby was talking to Czech goalkeeper Petr Čech. And now it's time on Radio Prague for our weekly roundup of Czech business stories. For that, I'm joined by Brian Kennedy.
Thanks, Pavla. The Czech Republic has recorded the highest budget surplus in its modern history. The finance ministry reported a budget surplus of 25.8 billion crowns in the first 9 months of the year, the best result since the country's independence in 1993. Finance Minister Bohuslav Sobotka said the performance was a result of the government's careful spending and increased tax receipts, notably because of a crackdown on the grey economy.
Czech farmers at the proposed site for a new 1 billion euro car manufacturing plant outside the city of Ostrava have reacted with anger to suggestions they may be forced to sell their land. The South Korean car maker announced last week it would build a new plant in the Czech Republic, with Ostrava its top candidate site. Farmers said they are open to a land exchange. But they criticized Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek for suggesting the state could force them to accept a deal. The conflict mirrors an obstacle that the Hyundai affiliate Kia Motor faced when it tried to buy land for its first European factory in Slovakia in 2002.
The national carrier Czech Airlines sustained a loss of 464 million crowns in the first half of this year, and not the planned profit of 177 million crowns. The results were based on documents discussed by the carrier's supervisory board and leaked to the media. The Czech Airlines board has not published the results. CEO Jaroslav Tvrdík acknowledged the loss and blamed jumps in the price of fuel.
The Norwegian telecommunications company Telenor has said it is ready to exit the Czech and Slovak telecoms markets and has already started talks with interested parties for its Nextra and Telenor units in the two countries. Nextra offers internet access and communication services, and Telenor provides DSL services. All companies are to be sold at once. The British giant Vodafone, which bought the Czech mobile operator Oscar this spring, is reported to be among interested parties.
Nearly half of all corporate research and development in the Czech Republic is financed by foreign-owned companies, the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development said in its latest World Investment Report. In this respect, the UNCTAD report places the Czech Republic in fifth place worldwide, behind Ireland, Hungary, Singapore, and Brazil, the government agency Czech Invest said. And finally, imports of foreign wine are up year-on-year by 28%, according to the Czech Winemakers' Union, and sales of domestic wine are suffering. Since joining the European Union in May 2004, there has been an influx of cheap table wine, much of it sold at retail chains. The union said the local industry is in crisis.
You are tuned to Radio Prague, where it's now time for the arts with Ian Willoughby.
Welcome to the arts. This week the focus is on 100 Czech design icons, a remarkable exhibition which has just got underway in Prague. It features an extremely wide range of Czech design classics, from a cubist clock made by Josef Gočár in 1912 to colourful 1970s inflatable animals.
The Financial Times, when they reviewed the show, they called it, they titled, the headline was The Key to the Nation's Memory. So it is equally about nation's memory as well as about design.
Says Tomáš Zikán, one of the exhibition's organizers.
First of all, we wanted it to be icons in the sense of symbols of their period. So they're looking for pieces which people know, people use, they have them in their households, and they have some kind of emotional attachment. So we were not looking for some kind of exclusive design prototypes. We are looking for the real things which symbolize the lifestyle of the period. And we have approached a group of seven people. They were not primarily art historians. We chose people who know design, who work in design, but they also have the kind of enthusiasts for a certain period. And the whole project was debated in the group as well. It was quite a heated discussion to come up with the final 100.
Among those selected was Maxim Velchovsky, who mostly works in porcelain. The brilliant young designer learned of his inclusion in 100 Czech design icons when he saw the catalogue which accompanies the exhibition.
It's a pleasure to find out that I was chosen. It's a very nice selection. I was actually quite a surprise. I had a few pieces in it, and I didn't actually know that this project is going on, you know. And when I just saw the book published, you know, so I just went through it like it was kind of like a pop encyclopedia, you know, of a design. It's not really like highly educative, like an encyclopedia, you know, in this kind of way, but it's more like a pop, which I like, so you can throw different pieces, because it's if it will be too serious, it will be probably boring.
The exhibition is on show in a most unusual location, although one well known to anybody who's been to Prague. It's in the Batia shoe store at the bottom of Wenceslas Square. Sitting on a cafe balcony next door, I asked Tomáš Zikán, why Batia?
Batia is a company, the brand Batia, was included in the project as an icon number 19. And of course, Bata is such a phenomenon. It's an international company. It's the brand name, you know, working around the globe. So we are looking for a symbol for the company, and we picked their flagship brand showroom on the Wenceslas Square from 1927, and we included it in the project and the book as a symbol for Bata. So we are using the whole building as an exhibit, actually. And secondly, it's of course perfectly positioned to get this project to as wide audience as possible, to Czechs as well as tourists, and to people who wouldn't normally go to a museum show or to a design exhibition.
Among the more surprising items on show, an orange metal tram seat, the cover of a late 1960s edition of Mladý Svět magazine, 1970s running shoes called Batasky, and in Batia's children's department, a krtek or mole cartoon. Have the organizers deliberately tried to make the show puppy and accessible?
We tried to make it an entertaining guide to Czech design, and the exhibition was meant to be a traveling show for a foreign audience. So we're looking for an accessible way how to present not only design, but what the Czech Republic went through during the last 100 years. So yes, it was meant to be both entertaining as well as educational.
You said that the exhibition was designed to be shown abroad. Where has it been shown and what has been the reaction?
So far we have shown in Berlin in May and Bratislava in June. So Prague is the third stop, and immediately after Prague it follows to Stockholm, Brighton and Milan. I think that Berlin, it wasn't completely foreign show for them because they know quite a bit of the socialist retro from Eastern Germany. And also a number of Czech lifestyle features are known in Germany. It can be Karel Gott or Czech animation and some fairy tales, some Czech products. People were looking at it both as a design but also as a way to understand what Czechs went through, how they could understand the Czech fortunes in terms of economy, about politics, about private people's lives, etc. And those objects were able to interpret that story. In Bratislava, it was, of course, you know, much more at the home territory. People did react more emotionally because they remembered the pieces. They still have them, many of them. And each generation was able to find a layer in the exhibition which was directly linked to their memories.
The thing I was curious about, what's particularly Czech about Czech design?
I think you can see uses of certain materials. And, of course, certain eras or decades are defined by certain materials. It can be plastic, it can be glass, it can be, you know, the fiber materials, etc. And, of course, Czechs are very good in working with glass and porcelain. So that's why you will see a number of those in there. Toys, I think that and toys and animation is also something which is going throughout the whole project. It's not in just one period, in different parts. It probably seems that a Czech design is sophisticated and clunky at the same time. I mean, many of the objects can appear slightly heavy-handed, but it can be their charm as well.
But in today's world, can design in this country remain in some way uniquely Czech? Designer Maxim Velchovsky has his doubts.
I think the market is quite global, you know, or even the waves are, you know, the big global tsunami is going around all the world, you know. So I think you can really, young people are getting inspired by magazines they buy in abroad, or I think it's easier to surf on the internet. So actually all the designers are connected online, so it's really hard nowadays to say what's really, why we are different, or if we are different.
And is that a view shared by Tomáš Zikán?
I would agree with it, even though Maxim Velchovský is one of the designers which is distinctly Czech, because there's a lot of cultural references and irony and humor which is commenting on Czechness. I mean, he, for example, he has a vase in a shape of Czech Republic, or he has a porcelain boot which is serving as a vase, but that porcelain boot is like a typical Czech workman shoe. So it's definitely very much Czech. But otherwise, I would agree with that. I think it's becoming a global arena, and it's more difficult to speak about a national design.
Tomáš Zikán, one of the organizers of the 100 Czech Design Icons exhibition. For more information, go to www.czechmania.com. And that's it for this edition of The Arts.
The Arts, written and presented by Ian Willoughby, has brought us to the end of today's programme. But before we leave you, we would like to apologise to those listeners who were not able to hear our regular Thursday broadcast on shortwave. The technical fault at Czech Radio's server has now been fixed, and we hope you can hear us loud and clear. Please tune in again tomorrow or look up our website www.radio.cz, where you can find all our programmes in sound and text. The address for your comments is Radio Prague 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or English at radio.cz. From me, Pavla Horáková, and the rest of the team here in Prague, it's goodbye now and have a very good weekend.
Posloucháte Rádio Praha.